Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. It is Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. Welcome to episode number 44 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Big T, here with you. And tonight we have a very special guest. Over here on the podcast, I know you guys are used to me interviewing, the professional wrestling superstars, and, I've had many on here, like Buff Bagwell, the Patriot Del Wilkes, just to name a few. But tonight, we're going to focus on something different. We're going to focus on the people behind the cameras that photograph these pro wrestling shows and do photographs for, like, say, the pro wrestling magazines or whatnot. We're going to focus on the photographers tonight. And with me tonight, we got one of the best in the business today. We got Mr. Bill Otten here with us tonight. How you doing, Bill?
Oh, pretty good.
Thanks for being on the show tonight. I appreciate it.
Well, that's no problem.
I am going to start off here with my first question that I'm sure everybody listening would want to know. You do a lot of different photography, I'm assuming, and I know you photograph pro wrestling, and what I just want to talk about is, at what age were you when you started to get into photography, like, say, with pro wrestling, and when did you fall in love with it and decide that this is going to be your full-time career, that this is what you're gonna, basically commit to for your full-time career, and how did you fall in love with it?
Only when I was five. because I was watching it on TV when my parents had a New Year's Eve party, and it was really boring for a five-year-old to see the New Year's Eve party, so wrestling was on, and I never knew anything about it, and I started watching it, and it was, all these interesting things happened, and all of a sudden I was watching it every week, so never thought about photographing it until... And this was in New York, and probably used to go to Madison Square Garden and see Bruno Sammartino and all them, Pedro Morales and those guys. I used to see Bill After and Giorgio Politano and a guy named Frank Amato. And mostly those three, everybody's got their three heroes. I was glad to say they were my three heroes when I was a teenager. And, I couldn't be a wrestler because I'm not one of these. You had to be a real loser back then to be a wrestler. You had to be a Bruno Sammartino kind of tough guy,
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't going to happen. So when I saw those After and Napolitano and Frank Amato, I thought, that's close to being a wrestler. You don't have to take any bumps, or maybe not any. And, I always liked photography because my father had a camera and he used to take pictures when we were on vacation and stuff like that. And I used to be interested in watching his camera working. He wasn't a photographer, but he took a lot of pictures. So when I saw After Napolitano and them, I thought, that might be pretty cool to do that. But then it goes, how do you do that? That's always the way it is how do you get into something like that? Because back then, especially, the wrestling was really tight. They didn't let hardly nobody got in. They just didn't like anybody around there. It was very tight. I don't know the word.
Like a tight-knit family. Like they had their own inner circle, and basically that's who they wanted in it, and they didn't really want anyone else, like basically an outsider coming in and getting involved with that circle. Does that sound about right?
That's about right. And neither did the photographers, Frank Amato and After and Napolitano. Great guys, real nice fellows, but they had their spot and they weren't about to give up to some punk, some punk in the audience, So I kind of made friends with Frank Amato of all people. And we used to talk on the phone and he'd give me advice, and I was a mark for him more than I was for the wrestler, because that's what I wanted to do. I just didn't know how to go about it. And then I wound up moving to Florida moved to Florida, late 70s, I think 1979, and then I started taking a course in what we used to do back in those days. We used to write to each other, like we had correspondence over the country. Like I have one in Philadelphia, and he'd tell me what was going on the rest of the country. There was one in LA, I had one in Texas, you know, all over the country. So that I could find out what was going on, and they started sending me pictures. And one guy that was in Chicago, his name was William Ambeko. I'm sure he's not writing the thing anymore, but he used to send me pictures that he developed in his darkroom. The one who sent me black and white photos. Everybody else had color photos. And we used to trade just audience kind of photos, like the pictures from the audience once in a while. And this guy, Will Ambeko, he was doing darkroom. And he had his own darkroom, and I was so impressed with that. He could go in and develop all day, and I needed pictures of one guy he had in the morning, and he made it himself. He never had to leave his house. That was a big deal in those days, you know, with the red light and the water doors and all the trouble. And I thought it was kind of neat. So I took a course in the local community college, and they taught it. We moved to, and then we later moved to Orlando. And I was developing pictures in the college. And he used to say, just don't hang those pictures and we'll come back and develop them. And I went into my own dark room. And I just wanted to say it's hard to do, even black and white, all things to do it right. It's difficult to get it just right. So I wanted to take more and more pictures of something that I could take regularly. I didn't have to all over to shoot it, you know, try to find something around it. And I found out from watching wrestling on TV that there was wrestling at the Orlando Sports Stadium. Every week, every Sunday, they had the Western Sports Theater, so I went out and checked it out, and didn't bring the cameras or anything. I was like, boy, maybe I should start shooting this for the audience, and then I could develop it, and learn how to do darkroom better, and I could also be shooting wrestling. It was a hobby, you know, just something to do on a Sunday, so.
Yeah.
I started bringing my camera, and in those days, what you could do, not like today, when once it comes once every 3 months or every 6 months to your town, the big show, this was every week. So what was going on there was weekly seats. You have to reserve a seat every week. You know, and I got fourth row, which wasn't too horrible. And I just started shooting pictures from the ringside with my Zoom lens. And back then it was 1979, whoever was there, I don't know, Mike Graham, the Briscoe Brothers, Andre came in once in a while, Dusty was there, those kind of people. And I got to where everybody was seeing me taking pictures in the audience, and the curiosity kind of got aroused. People were like, well, what are you doing? We want to see some of those photos. And by that time, when people started saying we want to see some of those photos, I had a stack of 8x10s done already, probably, you know, 2 feet high, you know, and I said, okay, I'll bring them in. So I brought the photos, the 8x10s, into the sports stadium and got there early, and everybody was looking at them, they were all excited, and they were passing them around. But what happened was, by the time they got done looking at the pictures, it looked like they'd been through a war. And these are my, you know, because everybody's touching them, they got their Spiegel hands, and their Lay's potato chips, and hot dogs, and ketchup, and everything's all over all the pictures, they're all dented up. I said, oh, I can't do this. And she says, oh, bring them in every week. We want to see them every week. This is great. And I said, I thought to myself, I cannot bring these in every week. I have these things destroyed. You know, wrestling fans aren't exactly the neatest people, especially back then. So one guy says, you need to show those pictures to Eddie Graham, who used to run office of the sports stadium there. And he says, you should show them to Eddie Graham, and, he might like them. And I'm like, Eddie Graham looks kind of scary. I don't think he'll like, no, no. The guy practically pushed me into the door that was really wanting to put some guy in the audience. So I banged on this office door, and I brought in my stack of photos with the ones that weren't all beat up to Eddie Graham, and he looked through every one of them, and he goes, photos in action from the audience I've ever seen. So, from being real nervous and thinking he was going to hate him, I was like, wow. And so he says, we're gonna move you up. We're going to move you up to the first row. He picked first row. But, so I said, well, I have an idea. I said, this is such a soap, you know, that sports stadium was every week, so it continued, just like kind of The Walking Dead. It continued every week, you know, with another episode that stemmed from the week before. So I said, why don't we do this? I don't want to bring pictures here anymore and have them passed around the audience. I want to show them. So I had an idea to put a big framed thing on the wall with your photos in it every week, and I would change them. I'd get there early, and I told them I'd change them and put titles, subtitles on them, what was the little description of what happened the week before. So if somebody didn't come the week before, or that did come and want to see that, you know, how I saw that, they could see it. Andy Graham thought that was the greatest idea. He was started next week, and I came, my father built me he was a carpenter, so he built me a nice frame with plexiglass in front of it, and I put, you know, a dozen or so pictures in there, 8x10. I hung it on the wall. I had a place right next to it. As soon as they walked through after they bought their ticket, they walked through the turnstile, and there were my photos hanging. And I left, and I came back, and there must have been 20 or 30 people standing around waiting to see the photos. And I thought, boy, I really, you know, I got pretty good idea. Well, every week I would do that, and I would give me some shoes. I'd be able to go to the dark room, and that's what I did. And then he put me in front row, but you still had the ropes in the way, right? Because the ropes are really big when you're in front row.
Oh yeah.
So I told him. I asked him. I said, I'd like to be like Bill Apper someday, and I'd like to shoot this stuff up front. And he says, well, you know, I mean, you don't have experience. Those guys are pretty rough. You know, you can hurt there. You end up there, you sign an insurance waiver. And I thought, oh, so I signed an insurance waiver. Hey, if I get hurt, I get hurt. And he let me up front. I couldn't believe it. And just that, my first time shooting from the ringside, Bill Apter shows up there because it was a world title match. I think the title was changing hands or something like that. Something like that. He shows out of nowhere in Orlando. And I was like, oh, yeah, my hero's in here, you know. And when he went in to shoot the ringside, he always goes up on the ring. Then when I popped in out of nowhere for the first time ever, he was so surprised to see me right next to elbow, you know, with the cameras and everything. And then he gave me his card and said, send me some pictures. So, you know, I did. And he liked them, and then he said, you keep sending them. He sent them. So I started working for Bill Apter's London publishing up in Hempstead, New York. Then the guy named the little Japanese manager, I don't know if that's me, I can't remember his name.
Oh, was, Mr. Fuji?
No, it's Hattori. He's a referee over in Japan now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, he had Mr. Saito and some other guy, and they were protecting. And somehow, like, I got in the back. I asked Eddie if I could go in the back and show some of these pictures to the wrestlers. They might like them. And he said yes. So I went back there, and I was showing them to King Curtis and also Don Rocco. They had a lot of pictures of them, and Tori was looking over their shoulder, and he was saying, wow, good picture, we need a photographer in Japan, we need a cameraman in Orlando, you know, and he was a correspondent with a weekly pro wrestling magazine over there, actually, it was mostly at the time. And all of a sudden I was on that, and you know, I met George Volcano at some show somewhere, because the Japanese was got to where they would send me to Georgia, and I started cruising up the East Coast to some other towns besides Orlando, and St. Pete was the big Florida show and all that, so I started cruising around. And then I just, before you know it, I was on like every single magazine. Magazines were big back then, and that was in 1980 I started.
Wow, so 1980, So right now, up to this point, you got 37 years experience in this.
Yeah. It's either totally good or totally idiotic was what I was doing here trying to think of it.
I look at it as totally awesome. I really do.
Yeah. I do. Yeah.
Oh, that's because you're good at what you do.
Yeah. The thing is, it's, you know, now it's in the last few years because of the internet. I guess it's like with everything with the internet, the retail stores and all kinds of other things. I thought it was just amazing, but really so many people are being affected by the overwhelming internet stuff that's just available for free out there. You know, it's getting a little rough.
All the internet has changed the game big time. It's like, I even remember back in the day, cause see, I'm 29 years old now and I've been a diehard pro wrestling fan ever since I was a kid myself. And I remember back in the day when I would get the old, you know, WWF magazine and when they'd have Raw magazine and, you know, you'd have to wait every month to get that magazine to see all these pictures, you know, from certain events that you'd want to see. And it's like nowadays with the internet, like you're talking about, you could see pictures put up instantly after a match is already over. And
yeah, that's what it is. So my thing is magazine, which as a news, as a news item, it's not anywhere up to date. As a tabletop book or something, it's still fine. You know, that people still do buy publications to keep. But if you're doing it as a news publication where it's a throwaway, magazines have become way too expensive to be a throwaway item, paper being as expensive as it is printing costs.
Oh, yeah.
It should be a keepable item. It needs to be something that people want to keep, buy, and keep. That's, I don't know how to explain it, but it's the internet, yeah, I mean, it's a media and everything, but it goes away, you know, and okay, well, look at that, we love that, see this picture, and it goes away, and it's gone. I mean, it's there, but it's pretty much gone, you know, you're done with it, and you're on to the next thing.
Yeah.
A publication you'll have, and I bet you still have some magazines from your good old days.
Oh yeah.
They say.
And you know what the funny thing is? I'm still a subscriber to Pro Wrestling Magazine because I know WWE, they quit doing their WWE Magazine monthly. So what I did was I went out and I subscribed to, Pro Wrestling Illustrated Magazine and I love it. I love it.
Good. I mean, I don't know why. You know, the thing is like, the music, like, everybody does the downloads now, everybody does the freebie things on Spotify or whatever, but now, suddenly, records, vinyl records, I just bought my first record player a couple weeks ago at a yard sale. I never had one, even back then, I never had one, but now I got a record player because suddenly records have become in again. I don't know if someday magazines and books and stuff will become in again. I'm not sure.
You never know. It very well might possibly. I mean, if records were able to make a comeback, magazines and books and pictures and stuff like that, I'm sure they'll be able to make a comeback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the wrestling, what it was in the olden days, back in the 80s and 90s, it was all territorial. You know, you had Florida wrestling, and if you went to Georgia, that this was a state over, one state over, which to me is just like going down the highway now, but one state over, you'd have the Georgia wrestling, it was a whole different bunch of people. Then you went the connect, then I go there. I go to the Omni, which is some of the greatest stuff I've ever seen when the Omni was hot. Then you go up into the next state, the next day or two, and it was the the Finest had their own little area. And then you go up in Pittsburgh and New York and Boston, that was the WWF. They stayed up pretty much around there. They didn't branch out much. And over on the West Coast, you had the Von Erichs in the Texas. You had that kind of Spanish wrestling that was really good from the Olympic and the on the West Coast. And you had up in Oregon, there were shows, and in Chicago, Bob Geigel or whoever in St. Louis, wherever he was, and there was something everywhere. So there was never a dull moment, and everyone was different. So you could go from one town to another, and it was a whole different thing with a whole different wrestlers. Now I go from one town to the other, and I see same wrestlers, the same setup, and, you know, it's not, and even the arenas are looking the same.
Yeah, you know, they don't. It's interesting that you bring that up with the arenas, because I remember, you know, back in the old days, like you're talking about, you know, every time there was a pay-per-view, they would have this whole stage design and, you know, there'd be something fancy for the pay-per-views. And it's like, now the only time you ever get that is with WrestleMania.
That's it, yeah, WrestleMania. It used to be, you know, and even WrestleMania, they used to have it at Caesar's Palace. They had I've been to every WrestleMania except somehow I was booked with something else for Hogan and Andre in the Pontiac Silverdome. That's what I really wanted to be, and I couldn't go there. But I've been shooting, I shot every WrestleMania except that one.
Oh, and, wow.
Including the first one, which was they did it in three towns. I did the San Diego version of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's like, with me, I started going to WrestleMania when, WrestleMania 27 hit, and I've been to everyone since, and I'm already booked to go to Orlando, this year, so I'm gonna be heading down there to check out WrestleMania this year. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, and probably hot.
Oh, yeah.
But the other shows are all the other events are in for the WWE are in the arena, so air conditioning there. But out the WrestleMania is going to be subject to all kinds of situations, and, you know, lighting, lighting situations with the sun. It's going to be on with its daylight, and then it's going to fade into the night. You know, and it'll be at the dusk and light of the ring lights, which are all different. Color balance. So it's a difficult situation for all survivors, and it's also a difficult situation for the TV there too, because it changes so drastically
because
it
starts
in the daytime.
Oh yeah, especially like I could imagine how hard it was with California for WrestleMania 31 when it was started off in broad daylight, like really early, and then you had to go through as, you know, the sun started to set and there was like shadowing and then it got darker. And then by the time you got to the main event, it was pretty much at its darkest point. And that had to be a hard one to try to shoot.
Yeah, that was a lot. Every time in California, it was like that. It had to start earlier. Time change or whatever to make it the same as out here. Yeah, that was one of the rough. I don't look forward to.
You know what, I could imagine. It's gotta be challenging at times. And now what I wanted to ask you was, you know, with you going around and photography, you know, doing the photography for these shows. Now, especially now these days, or, well, really, we could go at any point. Like, were you ever employed by WWE to be one of their photographers that stand around the ring? Are you employed by them today, or?
No, I used to be employed. I used to be around the ring. They always had the photographers that were from the ring, the big ones around the ring. But what happened was when the show went to HD, they pulled even their guys, everything, away from the show because it was, everything was too sharp. So there was too much distraction, there was too much sort of clutter around the ring with TV and still guys. So we all went to the hard camera section, which is the first section up. It's a lot of guys. I was real good at adapting to that because I like the big lenses. But a lot of guys tuned down to that. That was your back then. And so lately, since England, HD, I've been shooting from the Zoom, and not forever. I shot one thing for the WWE when when Jericho, first concert for Bozzy in the Hard Rock in Orlando, and somehow the WWE didn't actually go there, and then I shot the Bozzy show for them. But that was, yes, everybody thinks I work for WWE, but those guys, they don't give up their spot. Anybody thinks they're going to get involved with WWE for times and efforts. Super duper difficult, and even more difficult to be a TV guy for WWE. They do not give a great spot. They are not doing enough. Very, very difficult to get that job.
So what you do is you just travel around and you get the photos, and do you like submit them to, like, say, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, or do you try to get them put up online?
That one was long ago, yeah. I had them all. Now I'm pretty much with Japan. They're the one that, they're the survivors, the magazine in Japan, the Japanese record fans are such a, they're really good. Basically, I wrote a lot of these other publications, kind of fell by the wayside. Some of the overseas magazines are still around in England and in Germany, and then there was some in France, but they kind of folded too. Again, it was only the strong survive, and only the ones with a track record are going to survive in this internet world. So people ask me, well, why don't you shoot for the internet? Why don't you shoot for the internet? Because the internet I lose money every time I went somewhere. The internet for some reason, but the internet is not in for payoff at all. There's no reason to make a living on the internet. I'm looking for almost anything.
Yeah, you know what it's like, because when you go on the internet, there's all these pictures there, and, you know, every one of them are free. Like, people will just save the images to their devices or whatever, and, you know, they'll keep them and things of that nature. So, yeah, it'd be incredibly hard to try to make a living, you know, with pictures on the internet, because it's like they're just all exposed for people to take.
Yeah, very, very difficult. So I just, you know, I'm happy with the magazine in Japan. They've been good to me. They send me all over the world. I don't think I've ever been there before. I think that was the first time I actually went to a new thing. I've never been one. Corpus Christi, for some reason, I've never been on that. But I can remember that. I've never been there. I think it was the first new place I've been. And so, you know, you definitely get to see the world, and you definitely get to experience a lot of things besides, you know, getting to the wrestling isn't enough. It's a job in itself. pretty easy once you're there. The hardest part of this job is getting there.
Yeah, to try to get from point A to point B, because, you know, I've seen things on your Facebook, you know, post of like you traveling, and I'm like, wow, you know, it seems like it's a lot of work, you know, you go and do your job, but then all the traveling, or, you know, you're driving from one place to another, and it's gotta be tiring. Now that part's gotta be tiring of doing the job.
Yeah, you don't sleep the same in your, you know, there's something to sleeping in your own bed. You know, it's, you go into the best hotel, you're hearing different sounds, you're hearing different people, and, you know, there's just a different feel of the pillow, different feel of the mattress. You never sleep right. You're on the go from one town to the next because they're never close anymore. You used to be 2 hours apart. Now, I don't think, you know, I'm so happy if I find 2 hours apart. It's many hours apart, and then you gotta eat on the run, and so food isn't always that good. I mean, unless you get lucky and find something. Get up for early flights, super duper early flights to go out to LA. So by the time you're out to LA, you're completely shot, you know, because I stay up late and doing stuff, and then I get on a 6 day of flight. That means you gotta get up at 4 or earlier. So you don't go to bed till 1 or 2. You know, not too good. I don't feel too great when I get out to LA and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm so burned out on travel that I've been driving everywhere just for something different. And there's no other photographer. I'm like pretty much the last regular. There's a few stragglers here and there. A lot of them work for Slam website in up in Canada. And there's a few stragglers around with them, but I'm the last. I don't know of any other regular photographers that go all the time. I go all the time. I cover all the events, and I don't have, there's nobody else to travel with all these guys, and no more, because their stuff went under, so I take my cast.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of him. He's really cute, by the way.
Yeah, I found him at grocery store park, in the back of a grocery store in the parking lot. He was born back there from a straight Canada. Originally took care of her kittens, and there was like some raccoons or something that looked like they were going to attack him, and he was a little tiny 3 week old. Yeah, I picked him up, I brought him home, and I took him in the car all the time, and he thinks he's my assistant. He comes when he's born, and he gets so upset when I, you know, when I don't take him, I have to take the plane. So, like this weekend is Chicago. I'm driving. He's coming with me. We're driving over to Chicago and Milwaukee and Indianapolis. I think this is the weekend. So, you know, I'll be blowing up the car and he'll be with me, and he never doesn't talk back and he doesn't argue. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's my gimmick in outside. Everybody gets to pick out. You know, everybody's got Norman Reedus from The Walking Dead, and, you know, the main star. He takes his dad everywhere. He's the same way. That's his thing. So, you gotta have a sort of a little gimmick, and he's my gimmick. It's really different.
And probably.
I'm kind of tired of being on planes.
Oh, I know how it is. I've been on planes a few times, and like, I even gotta say, the toughest one, it's like you were talking about earlier, the toughest one was doing the, West Coast out to, California, because, yeah, I had to get on a flight, like, at, I think it was 5 or 5:30 in the morning, and did not sleep at all the night before. That's, when I went out there for WrestleMania 31, and yeah, that was a tough one.
Yeah, you don't sleep tight. I gotta get all my stuff ready, get my, you know, gear ready, do a lot of last minute things, because it's going to be days and days away from home, so you got things you got to do to leave. You don't just pack your bags and walk out the doors. There's a lot of things you're going to get done, so it's really late. You're saying that it's really early when you get home and you get up for the plane. So when it's time to get out there, you're total. You know, this is a hard job. I don't know if it lasted this long. I mean, I've been traveling. I'd say traveling has been for 32 years straight, all the time. The first 5 years, I was mostly in Florida. And I thought it was really cool if I could go up to Atlanta, or something like that. But, if I ever, I can't believe, WrestleMania is in Orlando. So that's 5 days or whatever in the same town, and I don't even have to get on a plane or take a big long ride somewhere. Great.
That's awesome. Now, do you work for your, do you work for yourself, or do you work for, you know, a certain, certain company, like, where you have to go and get these pictures, from WWE events and, you know, submit it to them?
I'm like the foreign correspondent to Japan for WWE. I'm like the liaison. I go shoot, you know, they always, I get a, all access pass every year, and I can just go to whatever show I need to go, and I go by what the Japanese need, and they tell me, and we go to this show. I just got my schedule through August, you know, SummerSlam, and, you know, whatever they need to cover, they put it down, and I put it in my little calendar, and sometimes I don't even, oh, geez, I got to go to Chicago this weekend, and, you know, I just head out. But yeah, they tell me, and then I upload it. I used to send it by FedEx when it was filmed. Just drop the film, and now I edit and upload the pictures over there, and they put them in. They're fairly, you know, for publication, it's fairly quick. And they get it right away, and they start working on it, and it goes in the, it's a weekly issue, but that's still, for a big color publication, that's pretty, you know, it's pretty good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so the WWE likes the coverage in Japan. I mean, they were kind of funny about a lot of the magazines years ago because it was competing with their magazine. You know, it was all a money thing. And now, because they don't have it, they don't really care that much about competition, what they would consider as competition. But they like the Japanese thing because they have Nakamura, they have the girl,
Asuka? Asuka?
Yeah, and they got the other guy who keeps getting hurt with his shoulders right now. I think he's coming back real soon. Hitomi.
Yeah, Hideo Itami. Yep.
Yeah. And so it's interesting for the Japanese fans to read about those guys working over here, and the WWE likes to be seen over there because there's quite a bit of talent pool that they're pulling from over there. They got AJ Styles from over there. So it's a good relation we have with them.
Now, did you ever get to go out to Japan and work their Tokyo Dome show, Wrestle Kingdom?
No, and not later. I've been to Japan, I can't remember, I've been there 3 times. Once was just to go say hello, you know, to my company, which I never met the guys, you know. And once was to shoot something over there. I can't remember. It was at the tournament hall. And I did the women's shows over there. The women's shows were really something. And I did a Giant Bobas match and some other company. I can't remember. Maybe FMW. Something like that crazy company with the light bulbs and all that.
Oh, yeah, I've saw clips from them before. They do some wild stuff over there.
Yeah, I wonder if Paul Heyman didn't get his ECW idea from that.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, you know?
Yeah, I have a feeling that had a strong influence on it.
I do. You know what, now that you say that, I do too.
Now it's mostly WWE that I'm doing, but I used to do ECW, all their TVs, WCW, all their pay-per-views, and the Impact TV show, and I did, you know, the Von Erich shows in Texas way back in the day, and up in Memphis when Jerry Lawler and Jeff Jarrett were running the Coliseum there, I did that. And also, like, the Smoky Mountain wrestling with Jim Cornette up in Knoxville.
Oh, that was great.
That was real, real good to go to. I always enjoyed going there.
So you pretty much covered, it sounds like, every territory almost, and every pro business.
But see, I've even watched them. I've watched the territories go down into the crapper. Right? I mean, get swallowed up by the WWE machine.
Yeah, WWE just basically, they started with the territories. Then when the territories were done, then you see them go from ECW and WCW, and then next thing you know, they're gone. It's like WWE has put a whole monopoly over the industry in America, at least. I mean, I know, you know, overseas in Japan, I mean, they're thriving. I mean, look at, I don't know if you saw the event, but look at what Okada and Omega did for Wrestle Kingdom 11 back in January of this year. They did incredible work.
WWE, nothing to say, anything bad. They're a great company. They really know what they're doing, but they're like the Pac-Man. Remember the Pac-Man game? The Pac-Man will come and eat up all the, the little Pac-Man will chew up everything. Well, that's what they basically have done. They chewed up every little company, swallowed it whole, and made it part of their gigantic, you know, what do they call it, WWE universe. They take it over, and good and bad for wrestling business. It's good for them, but and it's good for anybody who's in it, like AJ Styles or some of the big deal guys. But what about the guy who's got a 1-year contract with them and then he's done? He's a mid-carder or something. Where does he go? What's he going to do? Wrestle on the $20 or gas money independent show? There's nowhere for them to go after this. They used to be able to go over to WCW or stuff in an ECW or... In the old days, they used to go from territory to territory. He was done in Florida, he'd go up into Georgia before he knows it. He was a new thing in Georgia, and then he'd go to Carolina and just make his way up the coast. All those wrestlers used to live in an apartment, in little apartments and sometimes in hotels. And he had a house somewhere, but they'd be out at the territory. Now, they go home all the time, but they're out on the road all the time, and it's only WWE. I went to, the buffet at WWE recently, and all the NXT people were there. I thought I was at a TNA reunion. It was, you know, Samoa Joe's in there, and you got, you know, Robert Roode, and the other guy, the little Canadian guy.
Oh, Eric Young.
Yep.
It's, you know what, it's unbelievable, and like what you were saying, and it's an interesting point. Like, yeah, the indies are really the only other companies now, besides the WWE, but here's another interesting thing. NXT, even though it's under the WWE flag, under the WWE banner, it's, and, you know, even though it's like their training ground, but still, it's like something with NXT. I think of it as it's like a WWE indie promotion. Like, almost like they're trying to swallow up the indies almost, you know, by getting NXT to go around and have people go to the shows. That's what it seems like to me. You know what? Hey, it's working because I'm going to NXT Live tomorrow night at the Agora up here in Cleveland.
That is, a lot of people are bigger fans of the NXT than they are of a lot of people on these shows, and I've heard more people liking the, that's something that's kind of gone a little bit over the town because of being promoted, but they really like the NXT because it's something different. And you're right, Dave, that's exactly you hit that on the head. They made that their indie show.
And it's working. It's working.
It's working, yeah, it's working. And the guys, you know, they can get, before they go in front of millions and millions of fans, they can get ready there. And by the time they go to the WWE, you know, agents or whoever they are, the trainers, they'll know when that guy is ready because they watch him in front of NXT and make those NXT people excited. So he'll go and do a good job on the bigger Raw shows and stuff like that. They know when that guy is ready. They made a few mistakes. A few of them didn't translate well. And I've noticed that some of the NXT guys who are really, like the guy with the selfie stick.
Oh,
the blonde,
Tyler Breeze.
Yeah, Tyler Breeze, he was over so huge at NXT. And he goes to whatever shows, SmackDown, whatever he's on.
Yeah.
He doesn't even get anything. They don't even care.
Honestly, it's like I don't understand it. You know, I've tried to critique it and I've tried to pick it apart so many times because my mind always runs wild, you know, because I report every show that's on, you know, like when Raw's on afterwards, I'll go on the air and I'll talk about it. I'll review the episode of Raw and stuff like that. And I don't know. It's almost like to me, you know, that WWE, it's almost like they want to keep their main roster guys at the top. And it's like sometimes with some of the NXT guys, they just, they don't want to push them, but then some of them they do, like Samoa Joe or, like Kevin Owens. Yeah, they pushed Kevin Owens, but I feel Kevin Owens, you know, they kind of really now brought him out of his shell like 6 months too late. I mean, he hasn't done much with the title since he had it, and now that he's on the verge of losing it, now you're finally seeing a Kevin Owens like we used to see in NXT.
Yeah, it's a different ballgame. NXT, they've done it so well to make that a separate thing. You sometimes when you go there, you don't even realize you're at a WWE event. You think you're at something different. They did a super duper. They know what a Triple H is. I mean, that's probably his great idea. I mean, that was not just a training ground, but they made it a separate entity and like something totally different. The look is a whole lot different, and the environment and the fans even are much more fun. Even though WWE fans, they're different. I don't know how to explain it, but they did a great job with that NXT. It's really good.
Oh, it's incredible. Like, I've never been to an NXT show before because the tickets are so hard to get. Going to my first live show, you know, that's just a house show, tomorrow night. And the first TV show for NXT that I'm going to be going to is NXT TakeOver Orlando.
And, oh, okay. I'll be there at that, yeah.
Awesome. Now, I got an interesting thing about this, you know, when you think of NXT, I remember back in the day when I went to my first WrestleMania, WrestleMania 27, it was just WrestleMania and it was the Hall of Fame and it was Raw. And now so much has got added, but I noticed like on the, it was either on the Friday night or the Saturday afternoon, right before the Hall of Fame, Ring of Honor would come in town to have like one of their biggest shows, you know, Supercard of Honor on the same, you know, day before WrestleMania. You know, they figured let's bring, you know, a company like ROH up and good way for them to really, you know, sell some tickets and make some good money, I'm sure. And now with NXT there gonna be doing on Saturday, I know Ring of Honor doing their Super Card of Honor like on Friday, but it's like I noticed this for the first time, and it was a couple days ago. The Super Card of Honor is going to be like 50 miles away from Orlando, and I remember when Super Card of Honor would be like right in the vicinity of where WrestleMania was taking place, but it seems like NXT having that there even pushed Ring of Honor out of the area.
Smaller shows is that there is really no other than UCF, which is the University of Central Florida. There's an arena there, and there's even a smaller arena there where they actually just did the NXT tapings because they couldn't get the regular wholesale, you know, one at the TV studio. There is no other arenas really in Orlando where they can run. They'd have to set it up at like the flea market, or they'd have to set it up at the fairgrounds. Maybe they could come up with somewhere, you know. But there's really no where they're gonna go. They might be able to go to the Daytona Beach Ocean Center. That's 50 miles away. I don't know where they're going. Are they going to Lakeland? Where they?
You know what? I had it up on here. Let me see if I still have the window open on my phone. I was checking it out. Let me see if I can find this real quick. Let's see. It's gotta be, I wonder if it's Lakeland. Let's see.
They sometimes run in Lakeland, but they don't even run in the big arena. They run in another room that's sort of next to the arena or built into it, but it's not the big arena, which Lakeland Civic Center, they don't go in there. They go in another smaller place.
It's going to be, it says, let's see, the Lakeland Center, Jenkins Arena on 701 West Lime Street in Lakeland, Florida.
Yep, I know.
That's where they're going for Supercard of Honor. So that's about 50 miles away from Orlando?
Yeah, it's about an hour drive.
Okay. Because I remember, what was it in Atlanta? Like, here's a prime example. Like, WrestleMania was in the Georgia Dome, of course, and then Ring of Honor on that weekend, they were about 10 minutes away at the Center Stage Theater.
Oh, see, okay, that's where the WCW used to do their tapings.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that meant they had to fill that arena. A lot of those cities, that's what I hate. I mean, they torn down the original wrestling arena to shoot in them, so that looked like wrestling arenas. Now they all look like hockey stadiums or basketball stadiums, arena. And, the wrestling arena, there's one in Spartanburg, South Carolina. It's the original where NWA wrestled. It's still there. It still looks like a wrestling arena. And, Memphis Coliseum was a wrestling arena. Lakeland Civic Center had a lot of wrestling in the main arena years ago. So many of these places have been torn down and replaced with these giant arenas. It's just not the same in there. It's just not the same.
You know what? I agree. And it's like now, you know, they're putting up still all these new arenas and even stadiums are being built. Like, Atlanta's gonna have a new stadium opening, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and I know LA with the Chargers and, the Chargers and, I can't remember the other team now off the top of my head, but, Rams and the Chargers, they're building a new stadium over there in Inglewood that's gonna be up. You know, WrestleMania's gonna be hitting up the LA area once that goes up. I mean, that's gonna happen.
They follow the new arenas around.
Oh, yeah, they definitely follow them. It's like as soon as they're up, WWE, within a year or two, they're there. I mean, I could see within the next 5 years, they're probably going to go to Minnesota. They're going to go to the new place in Atlanta, which will be back in Atlanta. When LA goes up, they're going to be there. I heard that the Oakland Raiders might be relocating to Las Vegas, so Las Vegas is going to have to build a stadium, which means that you know that'll be WWE's return to Vegas.
Yeah, I'm sure if it's whatever, but I like the where it was really good was in the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. I don't know, last year, or I guess it was recent.
Yep, it was 2016, yeah, for WrestleMania 32. That was incredible. Yeah. Absolutely. It was just breathtaking. When I was down there in the fourth row over there on the floor behind commentary, I was just looking around me, you know, looking up and looking at the ceiling and looking at the people all around me. It was one of the most just awe-inspiring moments that I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, it's really, that was something.
And I'll tell you, the best live wrestling moment I ever witnessed, well, you know, just think about it, like 10, 15 feet in front of my face, here's Shane McMahon standing at the top of the cell. You look down, here's Undertaker laying on a table, and then here's Shane jumping off. It was like, wow.
I was right under the Undertaker. I was right in front of the mic, next to the Undertaker when that happened. I did not think I was surprised thinking he was going to jump. I couldn't believe him. He was up there, and I was right next to the Undertaker table, and I was in. I just put on the motor drive and let him, and I got the whole way, you know, his whole fall all the way down. I couldn't believe he did it. That guy is something else. That changed, man. He really put out an effort. That guy, he's amazing. That guy, he works hard.
Yeah, he's definitely a daredevil. And I'll tell you something interesting before I get to my next question, because I don't know if you heard about this. Since we're on the topic of this match. Alice, I heard a rumor that morning, the morning of WrestleMania, they had the ring all curtained off, and, you know, even above the ring, like where the cell would hang, it was all curtained off, and reportedly they were rehearsing a big stunt. You know, then we seen what happened at WrestleMania, and we thought, oh, that's it, and then I heard that night, after getting back to my hotel, I heard that night, that there was something bigger even planned. Shane McMahon, yes, he was supposed to climb to the top of the cell, but once he was on top of the cell, you know, like those steel beams that were within reach, and if you'd go up there, you'd be on the big screen on Cowboy Stadium. Shane wanted to climb up there. He wanted to climb up there and jump off that screen and go through the table, and Vince McMahon completely refused it. He shot it down. He's like, no, this is way too big a risk. You're not doing it. Shane tried to fight him on it because Shane wanted to do it. That's all the reports going around. And I was like, I wouldn't even want to do it from where he did it. Why would he want to do it any higher than that?
Well, he's a little out of his mind with some of his ideas, what he does. I mean, he thinks he's Evel Knievel. Evel Knievel's things, crazy stuff too that he, you know, Shane McMahon is, he's right up there as the daredevil of Evel Knievel.
Oh, you know who he reminds me of? Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, he's another one.
Yeah, I'd love to see Shane McMahon and Jeff Hardy in a match now, you know? Just get me thinking. Yeah,
That would be good. Hardy hurt his leg, though. Luckily, he healed up, but he was one of the HOA, and he said he was needing help. He even got through WrestleMania. Broken half on that motorcycle wreck he had.
Yep.
He had a metal piece of metal put in there to replace the total bone. And he said it was killing him, and he told me that just getting in the ring, stepping up on the apron, was so painful, and he didn't have any clue how he would ever rust again. But somehow they reoperated on it, and they got it working.
Wow, he's so lucky then.
Yeah, he really thought he was done, but he had a good attitude, and he made a comeback.
Absolutely incredible.
Now they've left TNA, so who knows what, they'll probably show up at WWE, or else they're going to get up there. They do these expensive. You want to get the Hardys on an indie show, boy, you better get your, call your local bank. They charge a lot of money to do these little 500 people indie shows.
Yeah, like I went to one of those small indie show events that was at a minor league baseball park out in Niles, Ohio. For Northeast Wrestling, it was, Wrestling Under the Stars Tour. And Matt and Jeff, for a combo autograph and a combo photo, you know, with both of them in it, I think it was like $75 or something like that. But at WrestleCon, they're coming to in Orlando, when they go to WrestleCon, I think it's going to be like $100 or something like that down there for them.
That's crazy.
Well,
if that's people want to spend it, that's fine, but forget that.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, so sometimes here and there, you know, I'll break the bank and spend a lot. Like one of the only times I really ever did it, probably over 100 superstars in, you know, my time, but like the one that I had to spend hundreds of dollars for to meet was The Undertaker last year at WrestleMania Access.
Yeah, okay.
I always wanted to meet the dead man, so I'm like, you know what? This might be his last signing. I'm gonna splurge on it and get Taker, but it was pretty awesome.
When I went to Japan, some guy, I was at the Tokyo Dome, and I walked after it was over. I didn't know how to get around. I knew where my hotel was. I was staying pretty close. I had like a 5-block walk to my hotel after whatever show I was at the last time in Japan. And some guy that looked like Count Dracula was following me, and I'm like, oh no, this guy's gonna, what the heck is this? I couldn't go out ahead of him, and then I had to stop because there was an intersection, and I was stopped there. They came up to me, Bill, I know you, when you look for a Japanese wrestler, and then he had this ring, and he took out, I thought he was taking out a gun or something, or a knife, but it was a ring, like the ring that you wear on your finger. His trade, and he made like an Undertaker coffin, and he opened up, and there was the Undertaker, and it was really cool. He asked me, can I give that to the Undertaker? I promised him, he made sure if I could give it to the Undertaker. I kept that ring in my pocket, and I have a vest that my gamer gives up, like a bottle vest that I clean it, but stayed in there a year. And I kept that in my pocket, and one day I was just walking backstage in the Raw somewhere, whatever the Undertaker was on. He was sitting there on the table, just putting on his tape, they take their wrists all the time, and he's putting on the tape on his wrist. I walked by, and I said, whoa, wait a minute. I kept my promise, this Count Dracula wrestling fan in Japan, that I gave it to the other. I don't know what the other thing he did with it, but I gave it to him. So a year, I carried that stupid ring around for a year, and then finally I gave it to him.
Hopefully that fan's listening, so they know that their promise has been fulfilled.
Well, I hope so. I try to do that for people. Have these, that was a big deal for him to give up, and he made it for him. That was cool.
I could just picture him being that way though, just from meeting him one time. Like, yeah, I can tell that about him. Like, he's just such a down to earth guy. Like, honestly, when you first see him, in person, it's like I'm thinking, oh my god, what am I gonna say to this guy? I've been looking up to him since I was a kid, and then I get up there, and he says hi to me, and I'm like. It's like I immediately loosened up and I just started to say to him, whatever I could in the short time I had. And I'm like, you know what? The man has such an intimidating presence, but I'm like, he's got one of the most wonderful personalities,
He's a great guy, and he's a gentle guy. However, if you piss him off, you don't want to say that. He had, the first story I had is he was in the house. He was a different now. There used to a few years back. And, there's a, at WWE, there's a fire guy.
Oh, the pyrotechnics, yeah.
Yeah, the pyrotechnics guy, and The Undertaker walks on, he puffs the fire just before he comes out, then the Undertaker passes, and then he puffs the fire again, and he has a big, giant fireball. Well, the guy timed it wrong, and just as the Undertaker went over where the fire comes out, he set it off. So the Undertaker almost burned on the stage, somehow he pulled the flames, and he went to the, he got to the ring, and it was bad. The fire went off right out of it, right? In his face.
Oh.
And what happened was, I was shooting from behind where the guy was stationed and the sound guy was. And I heard them say, Joe or whatever the guy, get Joe out of the arena right now. That was the pyro guy. Get Joe out of the arena right now. Because when the Undertaker comes back, he's going to kill Joe. So they escorted that guy. They took him back to his hotel because the Undertaker told the referee, "When I get back to the dressing room, I'm going to kill that pilot." So where he wouldn't really kill him, he would beat the crap out of him.
Oh, exactly.
So they got the pyro guy. I heard all this from the guy. I was able to put him down. They got that guy out. We saw the Undertaker's match was over. He was back to his hotel. By the time the Undertaker got to the backstage, the Undertaker spent the chair, this guy fell off.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So you don't want to piss him off. But he's a really nice guy. That's a good guy. That's that kind of thing.
What happened to be at, I think I'm having flashbacks now, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on the show, but I'm having flashbacks now that you said this, because I remember an incident, like, was it a television show? Yeah, it had to be, because of the pyro. That's right, they don't have pyro on our shows, it's only on TV. I remember a show on television when I saw something like that, pulled the camera off, and the next thing you know, Undertaker just kind of walked to the ring quick. He had to take his jacket off because I think it was his jacket that caught on fire. And that was at Elimination Chamber 2010.
It might have been there. I don't know, but I was there. I can't remember. But you look it up. You look in here and you'll find it. And he was really
upset. And believe me, that's one guy you don't want on your bad side.
This guy wiping his hands by walking out in the middle of big fireballs, and he's counting, just like wrestlers count, to do the right thing. He was counting on that guy to set that thing off right, and that guy's supposed to be professional. And he blew it. He totally blew it. And The Undertaker's career and his life ended right there.
Yeah. And
the guy was probably sending a text or something when he was coming out. Oh, ooh, dude, the Undertaker pushes the button and boom, I just paid.
I wonder if he's still employed by WWE, you know, I would assume not.
I don't think so. I haven't seen that guy lately.
Yeah, that was probably the end of it. You know, get him back to his hotel, make sure you keep the Undertaker away from him, and that's it. We're sending him home.
at least the Undertaker gave the message. He's all wired up. He's got, you know, he's got contact with the back, and the referee is on to signal the back that you better get that guy out of here. If the Undertaker was telling the referee in the ring the whole time, he's gonna kill that guy.
Oh, definitely an interesting story, and it was gonna bring me to where I was gonna ask you, out of all the years, you know, that you've done this and been on this wonderful journey of, you know, going around the world and taking all these great pictures, what was fondest memory and, you know, your favorite memory of, like, an event that you shot or a match that you shot? And also, who was your favorite superstar that you ever met? Like, what were some of the biggest and best superstars that you met in the business as well?
I wouldn't say I had one. There were so many good shows. I mean, I don't know what would be the best one. It's kind of hard to tell. There's so many. But one of my favorite, the nicest guy in wrestling. People ask me that all the time. Who's the nicest guy? Well, I would bring up actually three. One, the number one nice guy in wrestling is Norman Smiley. He's the black guy who's a trainer at the Performance Center.
Yep.
Nicest guy in wrestling. That guy. The number two would be, you'll never believe this, Chris Benoit.
Wow, Chris Benoit. Yeah, you know what? I haven't heard his name in a while, but I remember Chris Benoit very, very well.
Nicest guy. He would come from the other side of the backstage just to come over and shake hands with me. And always say, you know, that's it. But he was the only one who ever did that. Like, come that far and go so far out of his way, just say hello. That was even a good time. Like, just
Mick Foley. I've had the pleasure of meeting him one time when he was in TNA, and he was a great guy to meet.
Another guy I really liked and always liked hanging around with was Abdullah the Butcher.
Oh yeah, I remember him. I saw him get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, great guy. Funny character, but he's a really good. Yeah, I like him. I always had a good time with Abdullah and Kevin Sullivan. I liked also. And what's another one? Hulk Hogan.
Ooh.
Super duper nice to me and accommodative and always would do if I needed something from him. He would be there. And he's also been a lot of people don't like him. A lot of people. He's a good guy.
I'm still a Hulkster fan. I am. You know what? He gave so much to the business. And, you know what? I look at it this way. Regardless of what happened with Hogan, you know, and the things that happened and, you know, whatever. It is what it is. And, you know, I still like Hulk Hogan. And you got to think of it this way. There's two people solely responsible for the wrestling business the way that it is. Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. I feel that if there was no Hulk Hogan, there would be no Vince McMahon. And if there was no Hulk, if there was no Vince McMahon, there would be no Hulk Hogan, you know, like vice versa. Like those two practically in my eyes built WrestleMania. If there was just one of them around, I don't think WrestleMania would have been what it is today. They needed each other to build this phenomenon that we have today.
And all the glitz and glamour and all the entrances and all the music and all the spotlights and the bombs, and all that was influenced by Hulk Hogan. That all stemmed from Hulk Hogan when he was the Ultimate, or whatever that stupid name he had. But I mean, all of that evolved from really... You look back from Hulk Hogan and all of it before Hulk Hogan evolved from the Freebirds. Michael Hayes and the Freebirds. They were the first wrestlers to ever come out with a song. Before, the wrestlers used to just walk out. Hayes and the Freebirds were the first one to have a song. The Freebirds song when they came out.
Yeah, Bad Street USA.
Yeah, that too. They also have the Freebirds. They used to do the Freebird, the Lynyrd Skynyrd, the Freebird, years ago.
Oh, okay.
So, but then they went to Bad Street, but they were the first ones to have a song. I mean, those guys just walking out the ring. Like, Bruno Sammartino, he just walked out the ring. That was it.
Yeah, there was basically, there was no glitz, no glamour. It was just your time to go out. You hit the curtain, you walk out, and then your opponent's going to come out after you, basically.
Yeah, and they were two bruisers, and they didn't need any glitz or glamour. They were two big, tough guys, and people thought they were really going to kill each other, and that's all they needed.
And it sold tickets.
It sold tickets. They think wrestling was bigger. Now, it might be more of a mainstream thing now, but actually, back when it was territory days, and every territory in every state ran every day of the week, and every state of the union, not everyone, but most of them were running wrestling shows every day of the week, all at the same time. It was the number one spectator sport then, and attendance-wise, nothing, no football, basically nothing. And 360 days a year compared to the other sports, which I do them on an individual basis, but a little season. The wrestling's all year round, and in every state, every day. So the number one spectator sport was wrestling. And wrestling, when more people go to wrestling, and when people say, that I was in the old day, I'm not coming. If there was more people going then than go now, by far. Not to any individual show. I'm talking the whole collective thing of wrestling compared to the whole collective thing of now of live attendance. No comparison to the old days. No comparison to the 80s, 70s, and 60s. There was much more attendance to wrestling than any other sport.
And even in the Attitude Era, too, you know, when the Attitude Era hit in WWE and you had the Monday Night Wars, I remember when they pulled in a rating of like 8.1, which was the highest rated ever. And now it's like you're pulling in, you know, 2.8, 2.9, sometimes lower. But yeah, even like the events, I know exactly what you mean. You know, like back then in the old days, you could not get a ticket. You could not find a ticket to these wrestling shows to save your life.
Okay, what they do now is they give it all away on Monday night shows and TV shows from close to the pay-per-view, they have 40 matches on that. What they did in the old days, they pulled forward championship wrestling days, you'd see, you know, San Martino days, you'd see Gorilla Monsoon or George L. Steele against Pete Sanchez. That was the slaughter of Pete Sanchez, you know, from no-name guy. I'm just using Pete Sanchez as a name. And if you wanted to see George Animal Steel against somebody worthwhile, like Bruno or Pedro Morales or any of those guys, you'd have to pay and go to see him at the Garden or at the Pittsburgh Civic Center or at the Philadelphia Arena or something like that. You could not see that kind of match on TV. They gave you a little sample. And then if you wanted to see it, you had to pay and you had to be there. And, so that's what they drew in these arenas. They didn't show all this stuff on TV. If I was a wrestler, I wouldn't go. I'd watch it on TV. Why do I have to pay and go and wait in line and everything and sit 90 miles up when it's on TV anyway? You couldn't see it on TV at all. Nothing good. No good matches.
Yep, and the network too, the WWE network. Well, that's like Madison Square Garden, and you know, before I get into what I was gonna say about Madison Square Garden, I know it's hard to pick, you know, your all-time memory, so maybe I could narrow it down a little bit to something maybe you could pick out, like as far as your favorite memory. What's your favorite Madison Square Garden memory?
If you have probably when Bruno lost the belt. The shock. But nobody expected Ivan Koloff to beat him, and they were just switching it over. He was just a middleman to switch over to Pedro Morales because it was a big Spanish. It went from Italian, the people who were going to the Garden and to these big arenas, and major called more Spanish. So they wanted to get Pedro Morales in, and Bruno losing it was so unexpected, it was the shock of it more. That's a memory that it was so exciting. It wasn't exciting. It was shocking. It was a hush in the crowd. They couldn't believe it. It was so unexpected.
It was probably like when The Undertaker lost the streak or something, like that kind of thing. Like just.
Yeah, well, Bruno was champion for 8 years. 3 years. And all of a sudden, this rushing guy comes in, and the finish was so simple, and they just rushed him out of there, and then they announced him as the new world champion, they come out of it, and they would have Elias, and they come out of there, and they announced the rematch, which is the next show was going to be called off against Pedro. And everyone was like, well, what about Bruno? And I was like, well, so, you know, and then, far for 8 years, and then main event, not even announced. That was, to me, that was the most vivid memory of a really unexciting event. We didn't know, you would think it would take three through us on our team, it would be really empowering, it was 20 people,
Yeah. Oh, I know what you mean. And, you know, that's another thing I miss is Madison Square Garden shows. You know, it's like, whatever happened to seeing a pay-per-view for Madison Square Garden? It's like, that doesn't happen anymore. Or even a Raw or SmackDown.
You know why? For some reason, I don't know what happened, but Madison Square Garden decided to raise the fee. There's some kind of fee that the arena charges for shooting their costs. Somehow, their message, we're going to raise that price so high that it's not applicable to our events to shoot there anymore. So when now they do all the TVs and all the events from Brooklyn, from that new arena in Brooklyn.
Oh, Barclays Center?
Yeah, and it's all simply because of the fee.
Wow.
Yeah, they don't charge that. Madison Square Garden tacked on some insane fee for shooting. Those there and stuff like that. If they have to shoot, it's gotten out of control expensive at Madison Square Garden. That's why Barclays Center is not nearly as big and not nearly as cool and not nearly as iconic, but the price is right. That's what it's all about.
Well, now, do you have any speculations as to why that happened? Do you think it's just the fact that Madison Square Garden, they just don't want shooting going on in their arena, maybe? They don't want things to be filmed, or is it?
No, I think it's more ego, right? Might be a new manager who decided that. It really got somebody new in charge. Who knows? But, used to that kind of thing happens when somebody new comes in charge or something. They think they're so cool and all they did was kick it. I mean, Vince McMahon was a mainstay at the Garden, and now he doesn't even build it.
Yeah, you know what? It's like, I'm just thinking too, I'm trying to think back of the Madison Square Garden, when they went to the Hall of Fame. Was that before the, price increase for filming?
I think so, yeah. I remember thinking, this is pretty neat. It's at the Garden. I used to go there. Now I live in Florida, so I don't go much to there. So I thought that was so cool that I could go to the Garden again. And yeah, I would imagine that was prior to that increase. That increase happened sort of similar timing to the Barclays opening.
Barclays, they just opened when? Like 2 or 3 years ago now?
I guess so, yeah. The place is okay, but it has turned out. There's no way that I compare it to that. I'm sorry, the Garden is just too cool.
Oh, you could feel it when you're in there. Like when I was in there during the Hall of Fame, it's like you feel the history, and it's like you could just feel that history just flowing through you. Like you're in hallowed ground in those walls.
More than anywhere, I've been to Saudi Arabia. Where I felt that?
Where?
At the Olympic Auditorium in L.A. This is now some kind of religious thing for Koreans or something, but I went to the ECW show there, and I also went to some of that hardcore wrestling, the porno company or something that made the hardcore thing. I forgot the name of it, X or something like that.
Okay.
They made hardcore porno and hardcore wrestling. I went to those all the time at that arena. When I went to the backstage, I was like, wow, it hasn't been updated. It's the same as when Bobo Brazil and the Sheik and then Fred Blassie and all the Don Tolis and all those guys that I used to watch as a little kid, you know, they walked in those arenas, they were sitting in that dressing room. And it was no different. It was the same. That's what I could feel. Those wrestlers in there. It was, oh, I got such a eerie feeling in the Olympic auditorium.
Wow, that sounds unbelievable. Like, I got that feeling first, like I said, in MSG, and, it's just, it's just unbelievable, you know, when you're in places like that, and it just brings back a lot of fond memories, and I wanted to ask, go ahead, I'm sorry. I have kind of an interesting question. I don't know if it's something you can touch on or if you were there, if you know people in the photography business as to where it happened, you know, when this happened, or if you could even speak of it. Back in 1999, at the Over the Edge pay-per-view when Owen Hart tragically passed away, were you there shooting that event at the time? Because I was always, like, of course, you know, I know that was one of the most tragic moments ever. And I didn't order the pay-per-view, you know, back then. I did not see the show except for when they put it on WWE Network. And, you know, I've been looking to see if anybody has some insight, you know, about being in that arena and what it was like, because that was such a tragic event, but it's still talked about in the course of wrestling history today. And do you know anything about it?
I'm glad I was not at that show. I didn't shoot that show. I was booked on something else that day. I'm glad I wasn't there. No, I don't. I've seen it. I've seen the film. No, I wasn't there that day. I'm very happy I wasn't, because I would have been talking. That was not a very happy thing to remember, and I'm sure that would have been stuck in my head, and I know I'd be able to get it out. So I'm glad. And I have no idea what happened.
Because I couldn't even imagine what it's like for all those men around the ring, you know, they have to finish the show, and, you know, they're going on with the show, and, you know, that just kind of flashed in front of me, you know, thinking, like, well, I know you had to shoot shows, were you possibly there? So, I mean, I'm glad for your sake, obviously, as well, that you were not there.
Yeah, it's not a memory I would have been wanting to have in my head, but I'm sure it would be in there. I was really happy that I wasn't at that show.
Yeah. And you know what? I was even hoping before I asked, and I'm like, I hope you weren't at this show, because that'd be something, you know, to carry with you that you wouldn't want to carry with you.
And a related thing, I was at the Stu Hart Dungeon when he had the dungeon up in Calgary.
Nice.
I don't know who we shot down there. Maybe it was a wall. I don't know who was wrestling down there training. But there was a little girl, I'm talking 6-year-old, little girl. And when we got the picture, we were like, who's this little blonde girl in this gross dungeon with all these gross men, you know? And it turned out to be, it was in Natalia when she was a little girl. She was in the background of the pictures.
Wow. That's neat.
Yeah, so to counteract your gross stick about, and at least I went to the dungeon. I thought it was my coolest. You know, when they used to throw the Romans used to throw the poor guy to the lions. You know, it was kind of like that. It was really down. I never seen a lion.
Man, what was it? It was in Stu's basement, right? Or did he have a basement, and then did he build on something else that was even deeper?
I don't know. You had to go down. You know, he opened the, you know, it was like a, you know, like the bomb shelters, and then houses. You open up the thing, and then you go down in there. It was a bomb shelter, but it's this point that you opened up the, and then you went down a ladder, and then you were in the dungeon.
was really weird. But it was like,
Wow. I can only imagine how many people have trained down there, you know, over the years. And I remember watching Fully Loaded of 1998, I believe. What was it, when was it Shamrock and Owen when they had a match down in the dungeon? It was two people that had a match down in the dungeon, and I remember just watching it on pay-per-view, and I was like, wow, this is pretty interesting, and it seems like there's a lot of history there, and it's interesting to hear you talk about the dungeon, because yeah, that's something that I always wanted to know a little bit more about. I appreciate you bringing that up.
He was so intimidated. He talked to me, and he thought I had cool camera stuff. He wanted to know, but I can't even watch that. I'm pretty cool camera stuff. I'm so scared of this guy. I think he's going to shoot on me and put me in some kind of, you know, weird tie-up pretzel hole, and I would be screaming and rushing to jump my camera. You know. But he just wanted to see it. I thought he was going to just tie me. I really did. I thought he was going to put a hold on me, and I'd be handed it to him.
Oh no, he wants to see the camera. What's gonna happen here?
Yeah, yeah. No, he's a good guy. He's a really nice guy. Real quiet.
Yeah, it's just amazing how much history, you know, over the years that pro wrestling has given us to remember, and I'm sure you have quite the collection of photos, and I guess this question would be, what is, if you have one, what would be your favorite photo that you've ever taken, and what is one photo that say you've always wanted to capture in your career and that you don't have as of yet?
Probably The Rock on his movie set would be one thing I wanted to do, because I did many times Hulk Hogan. That's probably my favorite stuff on his. And he had a movie set that his TV shows that were not wrestling. He always invited me on and gave me real special attention there. And so that was always my favorite thing to do, was doing all token sets. The Rock is sort of similar, but much bigger. And so, yeah, I really liked him. The photo sets with The Rock, and that was a wrestling. I like to go on his photo on his movie set and then shoot as a still photographer. I think that would be something I'd want to really go be there, you know, even if they pay me or not, I'd be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be like,
off of wrestling, it's not really, it's related to wrestling, but it's not really certainly all of it's related to wrestling, but maybe because of wrestling.
That had to be quite an honor too, you know, like say your hero, Bill Apter, who you looked up to, couldn't get Dusty to pose, but then here you are. You're able to go in there and you're able to get him to pose. You're like, you're probably thinking, wow, I got one up on my hero.
Yeah, that was great. I love it. I hated doing the studio shots because these wrestlers, you know, they're trying to do their matches, you know, they're doing it, you know, they don't want to go and pose for photos. To this day, they still have poses of WWE and these guys, you know. And I was just about to ask these guys to pose, and they were busy, and it kind of was intruding, and it really made me, you know. But when Dusty Rhodes took his time, and came in the whole robe and all his hats and the whole Dusty Rhodes thing, I was like, that was great. I just thought that was really, really good.
Was he your favorite superstar to photograph, or was it Hulk Hogan?
I like Dusty Rhodes' matches better. Because it was always blood, and I always used to come. I was wearing a white shirt to the ringside, so when after Dusty Rhodes finished, I'd be soaked in his blood, and everybody would come over and want to see the blood on my shirt, and it kind of legitimized the whole bloody thing that used to happen those days. Dusty Rhodes, because of the blood, I always liked his matches.
I miss the blood. Back in the day, I really do. I miss when the superstars would get some color, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, you start hitting a guy in the head and bouncing chairs off his head and throwing him into the ring. I don't know what it is, so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like immediately I notice, like these days, you know, if someone gets busted open the hard way on accident, it's like immediately, here you got the referee going in his pocket, he's putting on the gloves, everybody's running out with the towels. It's like, come on.
It's like they don't trust where these wrestlers have been. Their blood might be contaminated somehow. They used to bleed all over each other, all over the audience, all over everything. Nobody, I never knew of anybody getting sick from it.
Exactly. I've never heard of, you know, it either, but I do have one match. Now that we're talking about bloodbaths, I got one match, and I wonder if you shot it, because to me, I don't know, I could be wrong, but at least from what I've saw over my years, this was like the bloodiest match that I ever saw, and it was with Eddie Guerrero going up against JBL at Judgment Day 2004 in LA. Did you get to shoot that show, or do you remember anything from that match?
I don't remember. I'm sure I was there. To me, they had that, and couldn't have been as bad as some of the stuff I saw. Disgusting stuff. Really. I'm sure it was bad. Compared to what I've already seen, it probably didn't bother me.
They just kind of go all out back in the day, huh?
It was Abdullah the Butcher. I stayed with him. He used to bleed every single match. And I stayed, he was kind of cheap, you know. He said, oh, can I stay in your hotel? He didn't want to pay for a hotel. You got two beds, yeah, I'm staying in your hotel. All right. He went in the bathroom and he was, you know, after his match, and he came out and helped him go to the bathroom. And I looked at the toilet, and his big bloody bandage was floating in the toilet, like, oh, this red, gooey blood everywhere. And I'm like, yeah, this is disgusting. And he goes, what? What's wrong with it? And I said, how do you spit all this blood? How do you do that? I mean, how do you take it? He goes, I'm a fucking slob. And my blood has got to be so loaded with cholesterol because I love it when I bleed it out. And then when all that blood comes out of me, my body makes new blood. So I'm getting rid of that cholesterol. I'm getting fresh new blood in me. And I'm not going to know how to do it. I would have had 100 years ago being so fat. He used the blood as a therapy.
Wow.
Hmm?
He wasn't bashful.
the thing was because he bled his blood all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? And I never would have thought. that was one of the reasons, you know, why he'd go out there and bleed every match, but that's a very interesting story.
The black people have a bad hearts in general. They're inherited, a lot of them, with, even though they're athletes, they have bad hearts somehow. They're stronger, their bodies are stronger than whites, but their hearts are weaker. And being a fat black guy is even worse. You know, he says, there's no way, but when for wrestling, and my bloody matches, that I'd still be over it. Because he knew that. He knew that a lot of them had, the black athletes had bad hearts for some reason. I don't understand why. And he didn't need it, but he knew if he would change his blood, it would help. So.
And you know
I'm
what?
I'm always on my favorite with that guy.
He's still around, you know, he's still kicking and, that's probably one of the reasons why he's still around till today, you know?
Yeah, because it looked like he would have heart. He hasn't had any kind of heart problems.
Yeah.
I watched him eat. He doesn't eat healthy at all.
That kind of sounds like how I used to be. And then on New Year's, when New Year's came around this year, you know what I said? I need to lose weight. I need to lose 100 pounds. You know, let's do it. And I've been sticking with eating healthier and doing what I gotta do. You know, now while I'm still young, while I'm in the last year of my 20s, get this weight off me.
Oh yeah, but you'll be better off long run if you can keep it off. You know, that's the problem, keeping it off.
Yep. And you know what? That's my goal, because honestly, what I want to do in life, I want to do something in the pro wrestling business, you know. I would love to do commentating, you know, like Jim Ross or Jerry the King Lawler, do, you know, like backstage interviewing. But I'm like, you know what, until that day comes, until something happens, I'm going to do a podcast, and that's what brought me here. And that's why I'm here doing what I got to do today, because, you know, for me, I can't get in the ring and be a performer because I have cerebral palsy, so I know I can never get in the ring and actually wrestle, but I'd love to do something, you know, with announcing, and then it gave me this idea to do the podcast, and I'll tell you, having interviews like we're having right now and other guys that I have had on in the past, it's a great time, and I really appreciate, you know, everybody that comes on the show.
And you don't have to travel to do it either. You don't have to drive for hours. You don't have to fly anywhere. That's pretty good.
Yeah, you know what? It's a pretty good gig. You know, I just, I try to reach out, you know, like I reached out to you and, something, I arranged something. And you know what? The fans love it. The fans that tune in and listen, you know, they really enjoy themselves.
You're the real thing instead of, you know, and something off the cuff instead of something that was planned and scripted and dialogue. And it's just off the cuff. That's the way it goes best sometimes.
Exactly. You know, that's where a few of my questions came from tonight too. Because, you know, I have a, you know, a live chat thing where people can just ask me questions, you know, while I'm on air. And that's where I got a few of them, like the Owen Hart question or, you know, certain things like that. Like, there's fans that are listening to us right now and they're having a great time with it.
Good. Not to go into photography now. It's 20 years too late. You had to do it 20 years or more ago. It's unless you're going to work for the WWE, the photography business in wrestling is not the place to be.
Yeah. It's probably, you know what, in the end, like you said, unless you're actually in there with them, you know, it's gonna be near impossible.
It's the same as like being a wrestler. Sorry to interrupt. It's the same as like being a wrestler. If you're not with the WWE, you may not as well, why even bother?
Yeah, and you know, it's like all these guys that left WWE to go to the indies. It's like, yeah, you know what, they're making a name for themselves in the indie circuit, but ultimately, where do they want to end up at, you know, in the end? Where do they want to go back to? You know, they want to go back to WWE.
Yeah,
they live, those guys, I know a guy who looks for a players, and he, I've seen the prices that idiots charge because they're coming off of some big TV or like WWE TV or TNA TV, and they think they're so hot. They charge, you know, these indie shows have 500 people if they're lucky, mostly 150 people, lost for $15 a head. How are they going to pay all these thousands of dollars to this one guy? It doesn't make any sense, and they think that they're worth all this money, but when you look at it, they're not putting any more rear ends in those seats than if the guy wasn't even there. I mean, there's hardly any extra people there because that guy's there. I think they're still going to have 130 people no matter what. And these guys are charging thousands and thousands of dollars, and these poor little promoters who are such marks for these guys are not paying.
Yeah.
They're stupid because they could get the local guys trying to be wrestlers and work much harder than these guys that are, been around and burned out already, and these younger guys are all much better matches they can be paying than them instead of these burnouts that are off, they're fired from WWE or just ran out of their contract or whatever, and charging all this money, these poor promoters that are just getting cream. I don't think that they're worth the money that they charge. They gotta come down to earth and charge a local promoter a proper amount based on the size of the show. It's not WrestleMania. This is a little show. It's a little town in South Carolina or something. And now the world, they expect to get that kind of money. And that's the problem. Their egos get so big. And they think they're still worth the money they were getting before. Well, the money they were getting before was when they were in front of a giant audience and they were drawing money for their company. Not with these indies. I feel really bad. Don't be an indie promoter. It's another piece of advice.
Yeah, being an indie promoter, it's got to be a hard thing. Like, the indie shows I go to up here in Cleveland, they have a little indie promotion called Absolute Intense Wrestling, AIW, right out here in Cleveland, Ohio. And, they've had good shows. I'll go there, for like $20 a ticket, sit down and watch a show. But I'll tell you, people that I've ever seen at an indie event, it actually packed, I would say, about probably 600 to 800 people in this little school gymnasium. It was just crammed in there, and I was in the front row. It was, I'm sure you'll know this guy. I'm sure you've already shot some of his matches. Johnny Gargano, NXT, one half of the tag team DIY. I was there for his last show, and absolutely incredible. Like, he wrestled in the indies in Cleveland and all around the world pretty much his whole career for, I think, about 11 or 12 years. And just all the people that came out of the woodwork at that show to pay respect for him and his last indie match was just an incredible moment. As far as going to indie shows for me, that was something else.
Yeah, that's good. I like, my favorite indie is, Big Time Wrestling, it's called. They run up north, but they also run in North Carolina, South Carolina, and they do the arenas, they try to wind up in the arenas where the wrestling used to be, and they have a mixture of current indie wrestlers, plus a mixture of, you can see Sting or Scott Steiner or Bagwell or one of those guys. Yeah, they mix a little of each. The Rock and Roll Express is always there. And they mix some of each stuff. And you get a little of the old and a little of the new. And it's a pretty professional show. A whole lot to get in. And I like that the best. The little handy show. Big Time Wrestling.
Very cool.
Yeah. You see a little bit of everything. I always like to see the Rock and Roll Express. I did a lot of stuff with them years ago, and they're always nice to me. They're always on my
And now they're getting the ultimate honor of being put in the WWE Hall of Fame this year.
Yep, I think that's great. They deserve it. They work really hard. They're still doing it in their 60s, and they're still wrestling.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's all right. I'm just saying that I have a lot of respect for guys that continue on, and they don't charge. They charge proper amounts to these indie guys to work the show. They don't charge. They don't let the rock and roll special go out for 3 years or even. They charge. They're the most fairest guys, or probably all the indies. So another one is Gunner. He used to be in TNA, Gunner.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah. Indie show guy, doesn't overcharge. He gets okay, enough to make it work as well, but he doesn't make it out of or reach for the promoter. And even if it's, 20 people in the audience, he puts on a really good match and works hard, and gives the people their money's worth. He's another good indie guy. I was impressed with indie shows.
Oh, he's a great talent. I do remember him from TNA, and he's definitely a great talent.
Yeah, I like him. I talked to him. I said, wow, you really put, they rip the people they don't want to work, and they decide they're going to get their paycheck at the end of the day. They don't want to work these Gunner or these not even old timers, the guys from these bigger shows that are now doing indies. They think that they don't have to work hard because it's a little show, but they're charging these people a fortune to be on the show, and they don't do that.
Yeah, and you know what? That's gonna make him even more respectable on the indie circuit, being fair with their price, going out and giving great matches. It's gonna end up making more money for them in the long run because they're actually promoter better, which means that said promoter is gonna be asking them to come back more and, do more things for them.
They're fair. Yeah, then they will get the return thing. The people who charge so much money are gonna get a one-time thing, and the guy's not gonna be able to afford to have a mat. So I think that these guys have to come down to earth and realize where they're performing, and who they're on, and people are performing in front of before they start pricing themselves. I couldn't believe the prices of them.
Of them are just astronomical. They really are. Some of them, you'll see is very fair, like you said, and then some of them, it's like way off the charts, like just out in left field.
If I was an indie guy, an indie promoter, I would put Gunner on my shows every time.
Gunner, I thought he was going to be, the world champion TNA, a couple times there, because he was getting pretty close to it. He was a great, great performer when he was down there. I liked him a lot.
TNA got to where they didn't know what they were doing. TNA was one of my favorite things to shoot. Probably for the first 5 years that they were in business, those shows were awesome. They were just so good and blood and fighting in the audience. And then they toned it down. I guess Universal got upset because there's kids there and it's a family park and these guys are bleeding and they had the throwing chairs around in the audience and they toned it down. And they were never able to have that. Boy, it was really exciting. TNA, nobody would ever think of it as being exciting anymore, but that was great stuff. The first 5 years, it was really good.
Great. I remember those days, and I was watching all the time. I used to order the weekly pay-per-views they would have for $10 out of the old asylum.
Yeah. That's great stuff.
I remember those days very well.
I always, in Nashville, and then they moved it down to, they had their first show in Huntsville. They didn't know what was going to happen. Then it was in Nashville for a while, then they moved to Universal. And even at Universal, they had these insane, wild, bloody matches, and it all just kind of fell apart.
I don't know what went wrong. At what certain point, it just, things changed. Guys left,
I don't know. They made some bad decisions. And the really worst decision was to take it on the road. That company was not a road company. a company that never knew how to do road shows. They were real sloppy at it. The WWE is a well-oiled machine. They know they can come in and set that arena up and they take it down like you're packing a suitcase. The TNA never knew how to just go in there and get this stuff set up and get it running smooth. They were a studio show. They were something that had to be in one place. And when they decided to take it on the road, that's what did them in.
And going head to head with WWE on Monday nights too, when they moved it to Monday nights, so it was like, oh boy.
Bad decisions and a couple bad decisions and that's it.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, all it takes is one mistake in business, you know, with some certain things, and those were a couple of the mistakes. Yep. It sure does.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely appreciate, Bill, all the time you've given. I'm just actually looking at the clock, and I'm sorry if I kept you too long. It's going on 2 hours, and so I'm sorry if I kept you too long, but I'm just really enjoying the stories. Like, I just love, and I know the fans do too, and it's great to hear, you know, all the stories and, you know, everything that you've done in your illustrious career behind the camera.
Yeah, it's I could go on for the next 3 days, we're gonna cut it off there, but everybody's looking. But it is a lot. You know, wrestling's full of stories. It's a soap opera, and it's a soap opera backstage, and it's a soap opera. The soap opera's never end.
That's true. You're 100% right on that, my friend.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any, website or anything on social media, anything that you would like to promote about yourself right now? Because if you do, the floor is yours.
Just my Facebook page, that's all. That's my name. I don't have any site. I don't sell anything. I just go shoot it and send it to my magazines and go to the next one next week.
You excited for Fastlane on Sunday?
Yes, I'm gonna go there.
That'll be
me and my faithful Indian cat companion.
He's probably ready, huh?
This is his third or fourth trip to Chicago already.
Oh wow.
Yeah, he's been to Laredo, Texas twice. He's been all over the East Coast. He's been in Buffalo. He's been in Philadelphia. He's been in Indianapolis, Charlotte, Atlanta. You know, just in Greenville, all these Richmond, Washington D.C. He's done the whole East Coast tour up until Texas. He went to WrestleMania in Texas last year.
He's been all around the country.
Yeah, he has, and not the West Coast, but he's been up to Texas. He's been about halfway across.
My biggest road trip was Texas. Me and my buddy, he drove all the way from out here in Cleveland, Ohio, all the way to Dallas, Texas. That was all.
I got you. I drove to that from North Carolina. Me and him drove North Carolina over to do the WrestleMania there.
Wow. Yeah. So you know what it is to get on the road and do all the travel time.
Something about being in the car, it's a feeling of some kind of freedom when you're going on the highway. I mean, literally going into the sunset on the highway. There's some kind of feeling of, hey, I don't work in an office in a cubicle. I'm on the road, going places and seeing things, and not working in a cubicle or an office or a factory. I'm just saying freedom of doing driving. And a lot of people say, oh, why do you drive so much? There's some kind of weird feeling of freedom in that. And I also get a lot of ideas, and I catch up on some phone calls, and I sometimes I have YouTube on, trying to fix
and I have to fix my TV or something, I won't watch it, but I'll listen to it on YouTube while I'm driving on my iPad. So there's a lot of things you can do in the car, and if you have somebody with you, it's actually the best time to talk is when you're driving.
It really is, you know, it's like just that freedom of the open road, and it feels good. It really does. It feels good.
Yeah, you think you're getting a strip search at the airport? It's fun. I mean, come on. And being there at 6 o'clock in the morning with some guy bending you over the table, you know, trying to...
Yeah, it's like right away, go to TSA.
Yeah, it's not exactly a lot of fun. And then you're up there in a tube, flying around at, you know, 5 miles up in the air with some drunken pilot.
And you know what? When you drive, it's in your hands. Unlike when you fly, it's not in your hands. You know, you're in someone else's hands. When you drive, you're in your own hands.
The whole thing started when I had a friend with Jim. I was going somewhere on the airplane, and I was looking up, and Jim Cornette's come in, and he's got the seat next to me. And he's nervous, and he was working with WWE at the time, and we were going to some show, and he goes, "I hate being on this plane." I said, "Well, why did you do it?" "Well, I got to take him to WWE one day." When he does his shows and when he does TNA, he drives all the time. He would never fly. But he flew, and I was next to him. And when we went in and looked around a couple times, and there was some weird noises the engine were making. It was cold in that airplane, but he was sweating so bad that the sweat was pouring off his forearms. So speeds of sweat running down his forearms, and I thought, maybe this guy's onto something. Maybe this is not the way to go. And then I started driving. And based on Jim Cornette's reaction when I was sitting next to him in the plane, it all started with that.
Wow. Jim Cornette is one of the people responsible for getting you out on the road, huh?
On the driving road, yeah. Jim Cornette, I've talked to him many times about that. He doesn't like to fly. He thinks it's really young. And it is, jumping a tube. The pressurized tube, you know that stewardesses or whatever they call it, flight attendants, they call it now?
Yep, flight attendants.
Their life expectancy is something like 8 to 12 years shorter than the average life expectancy because they're pressurizing and depressurizing so often that it's ruining the inside of their bodies. Eight to 10 years less life expectancy if you're a flight attendant.
Never knew that. That's a very interesting fact.
Yeah, so stay on the ground. You're better off.
Yes, to keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars, right?
That's what it is.
Don't go off the ground and just grab a star. You got to keep your feet on the ground and reach for it.
That's what it is. I fly, and next the week after, or 2 weeks later, I'm going to New York.
Oh, Barclays Center. And the places I've flown to so far, I remember, well, the ones that were wrestling trips, because I've flown other places that weren't wrestling trips, but as far as my wrestling trips, I've flown to California, and I've flown to, and I flew to Atlanta, but then we finally did our first road trip going to New York, then we did it again for New Orleans, and then Texas, and now we're doing another road trip for Orlando, so it kind of stuck with us.
Phoenix, Las Vegas, and LA. They all know each other, and they actually
out there and enjoy a little time doing the Atlanta show, get the Atlanta show, and then come to Jacksonville from SmackDown, and then back to Orlando. So, I mean, it worked out that there was coast to coast wrestling week to week. So I could drive from one coast to the other in two consecutive forms.
That had to be a lot going coast to coast.
I was punch drunk when that was all over. I don't drink, but it was punch. I didn't know when I was coming or going.
Oh, I can imagine just going coast to coast like that.
Coast to coast, yeah. So that was pretty cool. But one time, one shot at that, that's it.
Yeah, it's like one of those things like, all right, experience it once, but then once is enough.
Yeah, that was enough, but it was cool. I'm glad I did it. I went on the 10, I-10 goes way over, and then I came back on the 40. So it wasn't the same road coming back as I did going, so I changed it up a little bit.
Oh, that's neat.
And it did some, you know, like stuff. Yellow and got out.
Yeah, and you know what? I can imagine how standing in front of the Alamo was. That had to be pretty interesting.
Yep, I was at when the World Trade Center got hit. That's where I was. I was at a show, I was at the WWE show in San Antonio, and the next day it was going to be Houston, and I was in the Alamo, and I saw the World Trade Center being happen, screen in the Alamo, and I because of the
oh wow. And you know what? It's like in a profession such as yours, I'm sure the memories, there's countless memories, and I'm sure the memories will keep coming as well.
Yeah, that's one of the main things. I'm always wondering, you know, I'm going to be able to get hanging in. I just got scheduled again through August, like I told you before. And, you know, I got lots of bookings, so I'm out to hang in there.
That's great, and you know, I wish you the best of luck on it, and I hope, you know, that that they keep hanging in there and you get to keep going to work.
Ken? What I'm going to do is the sideline is while I'm doing things, I'm going to be up there, so the American Pickers, so these two guys are going to hang in and help us look for, you know, antiques and weird stuff on the road, and they bring them back to their place and tell them stuff. I'm going to be doing like that, when finding stuff to buy and throwing in my car and then list it on eBay when I get back. So make a stress about that way. That's something from the cat. It's my next thing after the cat. Now it's going to be on the way to wrestling, be an American Picker.
I love that show. I do. I watch it all the time.
Yeah, and I want to be one of those guys. That's my line.
Hey, I think that'll be a pretty good thing to do.
Yeah, I'm just like one of them. I'm in the van, and, you know, and I still don't have a van in the car, but I'm not going to buy motorcycles. I'm going to buy the smaller stuff. I'll buy the toy motorcycles or something.
Yeah.
that's what I'm planning very, very shortly, actually, to start doing that.
And I'm sure that'll be a lot of fun too, you know? Just keep going out on the open road.
That'll be good. Hey. All right. Well, I'm glad we got to finally talk.
Yeah.
We tried this a few times, but we never packed it up, but we finally did. That was good.
We tried, it was what, like before the Royal Rumble, I think, when I first reached out to you. And, then, yeah, I know we, you know, we kind of did our own thing. Like, I know I went on doing the show, and I know you were working, and then I figured, you know, a few nights ago, I'm like, I'm going to try to reach out to you again, and I did, and I'm glad everything worked out, and I really appreciate the stories that, you know, you shared, and I appreciate you staying overtime, too. I really appreciate that.
That's right. Okay.
Because I, you know, I'm pretty flexible with my scheduling anyway. You know, I pretty much give a general idea on what my average interview is, but you know, sometimes I do, I've had like two or three people that stayed over, you know, and hey, if someone wants to stay over, you know, that's fine with me because like I've told all my guests, you know, when they come on the show, like my name might be on this podcast, but like tonight, Bill, when you were on here, this was your podcast. This is your platform to say what you want and talk about what you want. And, you know, you did just that. We had a great time. And if you ever want to come back on again and share some more stories, you know, in the future sometime, I'd be more than glad to have you back if you'd like to come back.
Yeah, just let me know.
Yeah, I'll keep you updated. I'll keep you updated on my schedule because I usually I try to do, you know, one podcast a week, and then sometimes a couple, like if I do our SmackDown recaps, and then like say if I have an interview like I had you on tonight, so I'll keep you updated on, you know, what's going on with everything, but I'd like to have you back, you know what, maybe after WrestleMania.
Good stuff. I'd like to talk about that.
Because I was just thinking about that actually sitting here. You know, WrestleMania, it's going to be a big week. I know I'm going to be down there. I'm going to try to make a travel vlog, you know, too, to for people to see and stuff like that. And then I was thinking once I get back, get everything settled, I think that would be a good time to have you back. Maybe like the week or two after WrestleMania if you're available.
Okay. Yeah, just let me know.
Okay, yeah, now is it alright if I just text you now on your phone?
Yeah, that'd be the best way probably, yeah.
Okay, that's how I'll keep in touch, but for now, you could just stay on the line because I'm going to, you know, I'm gonna pull the show off air and say goodbye to everybody here, but before I do that, Bill, do you have anything, any last words that you'd like to say to the audience until you come back on again?
Not really. I think I'm talked out.
Hey, that's all right. Don't worry. You know what? I'm sure when you come back on after WrestleMania that we'll have plenty more to talk about because I'm sure some memories are going to be made there that weekend.
Right, I'm sure. All right. Well, Beth, I'm glad we finally got the connect.
I'm glad as well. Just hold on the line for one quick second while I do my outro and pull the show off the air. So let me say goodbye to the fans here. One second, please. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in and listening tonight. Was a pleasure. I want to thank Mr. Bill Otten for being on the show here tonight. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And make sure you give this podcast a listen. A lot of great stories and, you know, just a lot of great things about what it's like, you know, behind the camera in the world of professional wrestling and a lot of great stories from Mr. Otten. So I want to thank him for being here and thank you everybody for listening tonight. You all have a great night. This has been episode number 44 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And, I will talk to you all very soon. You have a great night. Hope you enjoyed the show and good night, everybody.